Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, March 12th, 2024, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Anastasia. Our Pleiadian lineup Starseed Quest is May 17th through the 20th, and we have had two spots open up. This is a soul family reunion, and any Starseed with at least one galactic degree on their charts is eligible to attend. If you feel the call to join us but don't know if you have the required star markings, just write an email to crystals@starseedhotline.com, and we'll take a quick look and let you know. This week is the anniversary of the arrival of Valiant Thor at the Pentagon on March 16, 1957. He is a created being from Venus who came with a proposal for President Eisenhower to end sickness and poverty on Earth. He lived at the Pentagon for 3 years, undergoing tests and interrogations, and though they concluded that he was not from this planet, his proposal was rejected because it would upset our economy. While he was there, he met with Dr. Frank Stranges, who wrote the book Stranger at the Pentagon, to tell the story of Valiant Thor. Later, Dr. Frank met Craig Campobasso, an Emmy-nominated casting director in Hollywood, who is also a prolific Starseed author. Since this episode originally aired in 2013, Craig has completed the short film, Stranger at the Pentagon, which won every film festival he entered. And today he's working on the full-length feature film. Craig has also written a trilogy called Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga and the very popular The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac, which will be released as a documentary this summer. Do check out Craig's websites. One is strangeratthepentagon.com, where you can watch the short film, and his book's website is autobiographyofanet.com. At the top of the show, it's Anastasia's Starseed News, bringing topics of interest and hope to Starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream. If you are an astrologer and are ready to learn advanced Starseed astrology, please send me an email, ariel@starseedhotline.com. Lavendar and I are gathering a small group of qualified people to learn the Starseed codes. Our main website, of course, is starseedhotline.com, and the Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one Zoom session. We also have a new daily transit service to help you navigate your life and mission with greater success, even if you know little or nothing about astrology. And remember, if you have a birthday coming up, you're going to get a window of 10 hours of power. You can find out exactly when that happens by requesting your solar return timing. And that only takes a week or two before your birthday to get it. But if you want a reading of that chart, please order it about 2 months before your birthday. So first up tonight, I would like to introduce Anastasia with her fascinating Starseed news.
Oh, I get to smile so big at least every 2 weeks because I just love that. Thank you for the applause, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I love doing that for you.
Oh, it's fun. I love it, too. Thank you so much. It's very thoughtful of you. I love it. Well, we've got some fun stories tonight, some interesting stories. And let's start off by saying that my hat's off to a young woman, 29 years old, who has become the first American woman to race solo around the globe. Of the 16 skippers in the inaugural Global Solo Challenge, Coley Brower was the only female and the youngest. At 5 feet, 2 inches, and 100 pounds, this woman was also the smallest. Now, sailing is, it takes a lot of muscle to sail. I'm impressed. She set sail from Spain on the 29th of October, 2023. She traveled down the West African coast. She rounded South Africa's Cape of Good Hope before heading into the Indian Ocean, where she rounded Cape Leeuwin in Australia before setting out all by her lonesome across the Pacific towards South America. She covered 27,000 miles in just over 4 months.
Wow.
Good going, Cole. That's awesome. And now listen, a lot of you very enlightened people out there are going to wince at this story, but hey, I'm just reporting the news. Did you know that the Big Mac burger has a bona fide biggest fan? It's a 70-year-old man from Wisconsin who has broken his own world record for eating the most McDonald's Big Macs, having chomped through an astounding 34,128 burgers during his lifetime. Don is one of the Guinness World Records' longest-running record holders, having held this title for 24 years. He's so well known at his local McDonald's that the staff have put a picture of him on the wall, and the fast food fan doesn't appear to have any adverse health problems as a result of his hamburger habit, although he has stopped ordering his sides of fries.
Okay.
34,001, and I can't eat one of them. Whatever. Okay. I think that's an accomplishment, such as it is. 34,128 Big Macs. Just goes to show you. You know, we think we know the rules. If you do this, you're going to drop over. Well, here's a guy who's proved us all wrong. He's 70 years old and still ticking. Well, I want to turn our attention to space for a moment. Let's get into the big picture. We've all heard of black holes. Black holes are so fascinating when we think about sci-fi and, you know, the Einstein-Rosen bridge and all of that, time travel, cool stuff. We've all heard of black holes. But, as any three-year-old would ask, what about white holes? Huh? I never thought about that. Well, what about them? Now, we know that a black hole forms when a massive star at the end of its life shrinks catastrophically under its own gravity down to an infinitesimally small point, or singularity. And all that's left behind from the stellar collapse is a grossly warped region of space. So where does the star's matter actually go? Surely it has to go somewhere, right? Well, one possibility, theorists say, is that it explodes into another universe as a white hole. So far, white holes are purely hypothetical, but astronomers are now contemplating how they could form in reality. The white hole would have to be in another universe, because the defining characteristic of a black hole is that it's an event horizon, which hides the singularity from view, and it's one way. In other words, things that fall through can never emerge again in our universe. It's postulated that for matter to pass between universes, the black hole and white hole must be connected by what's called a wormhole, a tunnel through space-time, the Einstein-Rosen bridge. Some scientists suggest super energetic objects such as quasars are actually white holes. And perhaps most intriguing of all is that the Big Bang, they say, was a gigantic version of this very thing. White holes. Wow. Well, e-waste has suddenly become super-duper profitable. A new method for recovering gold from discarded electronics is paying back $50 for every dollar that's spent. And this is according to researchers who found their gold-filtering substance in cheese-making, of all things. In a new study, researchers from Switzerland have detailed a sustainable, cost-effective method of extracting gold from electronic waste, or e-waste. One of the researchers said, the fact that I love the most is that we're using a food industry byproduct to obtain gold from electronic waste. You can't get more sustainable than that. Well, the byproduct that man's referring to is whey, the watery portion of milk that separates from the curds when making cheese. The researchers managed to turn this dairy waste into a matrix of protein amyloid fibrils, and successfully used it to selectively remove gold from the waste. E-waste represents 2% of America's trash and landfills, but it equals 70% of overall toxic waste. Wow.
Wow.
In 2019, the World Health Organization estimated that 53.5 million tons of e-waste was produced globally, but only 17% was documented as formally collected and recycled. So this new invention by the Switzerland guys can only be good news, really. That's awesome. 70% of the overall toxic waste, that's huge. So, I mean, I consider that a miraculous discovery.
Yeah.
And I wish them all the best in pursuing it. Well, about the restoration of nature. The European Parliament has adopted a law to restore land and sea. Under this law, countries must restore at least 30% of habitats in poor condition by 2030, 60% by 2040, and 90% by 2050. Just think about that. Member states will also have to restore at least 25,000 kilometers of rivers to be free-flowing rivers and ensure there is no net loss in the total national area of urban green space and of urban tree canopy cover. They're getting real serious about the environment. That's pretty tremendous.
Yeah.
Well, I love the desert. I always have. I love the mountains, and I love the ocean. I love it all, but I have an affinity for deserts, and I've always been fascinated with sand dunes. And now they have managed to calculate the age of one of the Earth's largest sand dunes. Yep, the age of one of our planet's largest and most complex types of sand dune has been calculated for the very first time. This is a star dune, which is also known as a pyramid dune. They're shaped like pyramids. They reach hundreds of meters in height. They're found in Africa, Asia, and North America, but experts had never before been able to put a date on when these dunes were formed. Now scientists have discovered that a dune called Lalalalia in Morocco formed 13,000 years ago. That's a long time for a pile of sand to exist.
Yeah.
They say star dunes are created by opposing winds that change direction. Lalalalia, that name is indigenous name, means highest sacred point, is located in southeast Morocco. It's 100 meters high and 700 meters wide, and after its initial formation, it stopped growing for about 8,000 years and then quickly expanded in the past several thousand years. We might wonder what happened to the wind that it quit growing. Anyway, these calculations were made by somebody at the university somewhere in Morocco. I can't pronounce it. It's impossible. And by somebody at Birkbeck University from England. And they used a technique called luminescence dating to work out the age of the star dune. And how does that work? Well, this method calculates when the grains of sand were last exposed to daylight. Amazing. Now, other examples of these huge dunes include the Star Dune in Colorado, which is the joint second highest dune in the U.S., measuring 225 meters from base to top. They didn't say what is the highest meter. I don't know why they gave us the second highest dune. Excuse me. Second highest dune. Anyway, in Colorado, it's a big one. Have you seen it? Some of you have been to Colorado. You might have seen it. Well, this is humorous. I think this is very interesting as women. There's a statue imbalance in Denmark. What does that mean? Well, Denmark has pledged to put up more statues of women, with the country's culture minister saying that the capital has more statues of mythical beasts and horses than we do women. Of the 101 named statues in Copenhagen, only 5 are of women, while there are 26 dedicated to animals and 70 to men. The culture minister has pledged to spend up to 50 million Danish kroner on correcting this imbalance, which, by the way, is $7.3 million. More statues of women. I thought it was humorous. They have more statues of mythical beasts and horses than they do of women. That's amazing. Wow. So they're going to make that better, and that's good. Now, here's a story from our science department, and honestly, listen to this. Scientists at Pennsylvania State University have successfully 3D printed living human skin tissue. That's right. Living human skin tissue, 3D printed, and placed it directly into open wounds for the first time in history. I'll say, This bioengineering milestone could pave the way for major developments in reconstructive surgery or even human hair treatments. Current methods of skin and hair reconstruction, like skin grafts, often result in scars, meaning this discovery could lead to more seamless treatment for humans. I'm familiar with somewhat with burn victims, and unbelievable, they can 3D print living human skin tissue. I'm stunned.
Yeah.
That's incredible. It really is. Well, here's one for you. Think about this. I don't know what you're going to think about it, but I'm going to report it. The European Union has made ecosystem destruction a crime. In a historic measure, the European Union has made serious incidents of environmental degradation a crime, punishable by imprisonment, which has set, of course, a global precedent. A French lawyer praises the decision as one of the most ambitious legislations across the world and one that is regarded as a watershed moment. Member states have 2 years to implement this directive into national law. Offenders, heads up, you're going to get in trouble. Now, even though the text of the law does not explicitly call the crime ecocide, the directive's preamble refers to offenses that are comparable to ecocide. Of course, ecocide is defined as unlawful or wanton acts causing substantial and severe damage to the environment. Proponents claim that this is a significant step toward criminalizing ecocide on a global basis. The law lists a variety of environmental activities, such as water abstraction, illicit logging, habitat loss, ship recycling, pollution, and the introduction of invasive alien species, all serious ecosystem degradation. So you might have to get rid of your pampas grass. There's so many things that we put in our lawns and our yards that are not native to our areas. Anyway, crucially, the new law means that any guilty individual, including CEOs and board members, face harsh penalties, including prison sentences of up to 10 years. Legislatures say CEOs can risk a fine, but they do not want to be personally involved. They never want to go to jail. And he said, there is real momentum growing around the law at every level. People want this law. I have no doubt we'll see international recognition in the near future, meaning other countries will jump on board. The discussion around criminalizing ecocide has been gathering over the recent years. This new directive is viewed as a step towards adding ecocide as a fifth international crime after war crimes, crimes of aggression, crimes against humanity, and genocide. Serious stuff. Indeed, one EU member of Belgium recently voted in favor of making ecocide punishable at both national and international levels, making this country the first European nation to recognize ecocide under international law.
Wow.
Well, you know, that's probably tremendously good for the environment, but some will say that's really heavy-handed. I don't know what all of you say. I'm reporting the news. And really, finally, people are coming to the defense of the planet as it is. Well, I love this story. Would any of you out there care to guess how old is the oldest person in the world? I'll give you about 3 seconds to think about it. Of course, I can't hear your answer. I'm going to tell you right now.
120.
Oh, you're close. Good for you. No kidding. I wouldn't have gone over 112. Well, there is somebody who turned 117 years old this week. She's the world's oldest living person. Her name is Maria Morera. This woman lives in a nursing home in Catalonia, Spain. But don't get the wrong idea. She is as fit as a fiddle. Now, she's also agreed to help Spanish scientists see if they can discover the secrets of her longevity. Scientists are going to study her. Scientists want to find out what has given this woman a long, long life because they're bewildered. She's called a super grandmother in fabulous health. She's still highly lucid, no apparent neurodegenerative or cardiovascular disease. She was born way back in 1907 in San Francisco and went to Spain as a child, where she settled in Catalonia. She's known to her 14,000 social media followers as Super Maria. She's lived in the region ever since. She's resided in the same nursing home for the last two decades. Now, the super grandmother has agreed to undergo scientific testing, which researchers really want to find out the mystery and how certain diseases associated with old age come about. They think she might be a key. Now, she has no health complications other than hearing. She lost her hearing as a child, and she has a little hard time getting around. She's stiff. The scientist says to the media, he said, she has a completely lucid head. She doesn't present any disease common in elderly people. But if you think this amazing woman must have had a very easy life on a satin pillow, think again. She survived an earthquake while she was in the United States, a major fire, both world wars, the Spanish flu, the Spanish Civil War, and more recently, this ancient woman survived COVID-19. They say we know Maria's chronological age, 117 years, but we must determine her biological age, the scientists say. She has to be much younger physically. So to take her biological age, they've taken samples of her saliva, blood, and urine. They are thought to be the longest-lived biological samples. They have great scientific value. And she's often been asked, what is her secret to a long life? And she uses her social media account to post her advice for others. She said that she's lived so long because she's had order, tranquility, good connection with family and friends, contact and a lot of time in nature, emotional stability, no worries, no regrets, lots of positivity, and I've stayed away from toxic people. However, she also credits this to what she says, a great amount of good fortune. It's
wow.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Well, and we're going to go back to the environment for just a moment. Here we are, more environmental stories. Now, I can tell you how I feel about this one. Raising one eyebrow. There is a new satellite that's been launched to identify methane polluters. Look out, you methane polluters. Better watch your lawnmowers. They now have nowhere to hide after an independent monitoring satellite launched to pinpoint companies belching out the potent greenhouse gas. It's looking for offenders. Methane is a particularly dirty greenhouse gas. You probably all know that by now. It drives about 30% of the heating the planet has experienced so far. It breaks down in the atmosphere in just 12 years, which is much sooner than the centuries taken by carbon dioxide. And it's around 80 times more powerful over a 20-year time span. So climate action is focused on curbing carbon emissions, but they say that methane is now the target. They're really going to be looking for methane leaks. They say much of it escapes from leaks in oil and gas wells. But the idea is to find people and I'm quoting, shame them. Now, that I have a problem with that. But anyway, beside the point, who cares? I'm just telling you what the news. The important new methane detection satellite entered orbit this week. It's going to spot the methane sources. And they say by making people accountable, they hope that it will reduce rapidly. People will do something about it. They don't want to be shamed. They call it a revolution. It's called MethaneSat. It could precisely measure methane leaks with high resolution over wide areas. And some 150 nations have signed the Global Methane Pledge to cut methane emissions by 30% by 2030. They say that's the fastest way to slow the rate of warming. So, wow. And for vacation, what are you going to do? You want to go to a nice warm place? Want to go to the beach? Want to go south of the equator? Well, guess what? Summer vacations in colder climates are getting a whole lot more popular because people are turning to what they're calling coolcations to avoid record-breaking heat. Despite the wince-inducing name, coolcationing could potentially shape the travel and resort industries as climate change alters where people choose to vacation. Condé Nast Traveler named coolcationing one of the biggest travel trends to expect in 2024, noting that heat waves are making a summer vacation in Norway more appealing than one in Sicily or southern France. All right? That's what they say. And finally, the last story of the night. It's about cats, sort of. A public library has come up with a solution for their unpaid fines. They're using cats. They call it a feline-friendly initiative. The Worcester Public Library in Massachusetts has introduced March Meowness, Felines for Fee Forgiveness. It's delightful. If you find yourself facing overdue fees for lost or damaged public library items, all that you're going to need is a picture of a cat to wipe the slate clean. The library took to Facebook to announce the innovative and intriguing campaign, declaring, "Today is the day. We've got 1 month of fee forgiveness for lost or damaged items. Show us a picture of your cat, a famous cat, a picture you drew of a cat, any cat, and we will forgive your fees on your account." Well, apparently the response was spectacular. Cat lovers and library patrons shared snapshots of their kitty friends to reclaim their library privileges. They posted them. There's hundreds of cat photos. The library's initiative also has a second motivation, as their Facebook page indicated. It says, "Learn how you can get involved with the Worcester Animal Rescue League and Second Chance Animal Services. Make cat toys for your own cat or to donate to the shelter cats. Vote in our March Meowness bracket and check out some cat titles." So, photographs and drawings of felines became a currency for fee forgiveness. That's really kind of cute, isn't it? Really sweet. Somebody has a sense of humor. That's really sweet. And you can bet they got a whole lot of books back, too. Well, here's a hilarious quote by Benjamin Franklin. He said, "I wake up every morning at 9 and grab for the morning paper. Then I look at the obituary page. If my name's not on it, I get up." So, in response to that, I say, don't count the days. Make the days count. If you're not on it, get up and make the days count. From my heart to each one of you, much love. Thank you so much for letting me be with you tonight, Ariel. It's my privilege. Thank you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, and you do a great job, Anastasia. Thanks so much, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
You will. Good night.
Okay, good night. Well, we have a wonderful show for you tonight. For those of you that haven't heard the story of Valiant Thor and the book called The Stranger at the Pentagon, which I strongly recommend that you read. It's just fascinating. Valiant Thor, a created being who lives in the interior of the planet Venus. He came on March 16th, 1957, and in a minute here, I'm going to have Craig be telling you that story. So without further ado, here is Craig Campobasso with his original appearance on Starseed Hotline. He's been a guest of multiple times. And I do recommend that you check out his two websites. One is strangeratthepentagon.com, where you can see pictures. He's got blueprints for the Victor 1 starship, mothership, the flagship, all kinds of things that he inherited from Dr. Frank Stranges, who, by the way, when Dr. Frank crossed, he did so on Pleiadian lineup in November. So, and Craig's other website, autobiographyofanet.com. And he's got all of his books on there, and he's a wonderful writer. So be sure to check that out. And now here is the interview with Craig and Lavendar.
Lavendar, I've got your mic open, and we are proud to introduce to you Craig Campobasso. Welcome, Craig.
Thank you so much. That was, I love the whole news segment. That was just fascinating. Thank you, Anastasia.
You are very welcome. Thank you.
How are you all?
Well, Craig, this is Lavendar, and I just want to thank you for the package that you sent me. I had read Stranger at the Pentagon many, many years ago, but you sent me a new copy, and I took the time to sit down and read the whole thing, and I got so excited again reading it, thinking, oh, yeah, I remember this, and I remember that, but to refresh myself was wonderful. So if you would just start at the very beginning of how this project came to you. Now, you're working on a full-length feature film called Stranger at the Pentagon, and we'll talk about that later at the end, but let's talk about the subject matter and how this all came about and how Frank Strange's, how he wrote this story about a valiant Thor.
Well, I'll start at the beginning and give everybody a sort of capsulized version. The story begins on March 16th, 1957. It was a Saturday morning at 8 a.m., and a giant saucer craft came and landed in a field in Alexandria, Virginia. There were two police officers who reported it, and they were the first that were on the scene. They came upon it. They drew their handguns, and when the gentleman walked out of the craft, they looked at him and saw that this man was so immersed in love that they literally just dropped their weapons and had a conversation with him, which was he had a message for the President of the United States. So they radioed ahead to the Pentagon. They brought him to the Pentagon. He was debriefed by the Secretary of Defense. Mind you, all these people were coming in on their day off. He was taken to meet with Eisenhower, Nixon, and the Joint Chiefs, and he came with a divine design, which was to help eliminate sickness, disease, and poverty, and to prolong life. And the gentleman's name is Valiant Thor, and we later learned that he's a created being, or what we would call an angel in human form. So after this brief meeting with Eisenhower back then, Eisenhower put him on VIP status, and they decided the time duration for him to stay there and go over this proposal and other things would be a 3-year period. So he actually lived and worked there at the Pentagon for 3 years, and then he departed on March 16th, 1960. So the book is primarily about what his main mission is. Dr. Frank Strange is who wrote the book. He was doing a lecture in Washington, D.C. For 2 weeks just before Christmas time in 1959. One of the high-level Clarence secretaries who had become friends with Valiant Thor, he sent her to go bring Dr. Frank to him because Dr. Frank spoke about UFOs and all kinds of things, and one of his main things was always UFOs in the Bible. So he would go and point out all of the stuff that was in the Bible as well. So he actually met Valiant Thor. He was brought to the Pentagon, and he met him on Christmas Eve, 1959. They spoke about, Valiant Thor told him many things about himself that he didn't know. But the one thing that Dr. Frank told me that just sent an all-knowing through him was when he looked firstly through his eyes, he knew that he went into his soul and read his entire soul history. And Dr. Frank said it is the strangest feeling, but you know, you feel vulnerable and you feel terrific at the same time. And anyway, he proceeded to tell him things about his life, which he confirmed later on with his parents, that before him there was a baby, a boy, who passed away, and that Dr. Frank actually was going that way when he was born. But he was brought back to life because he had a special mission. So he did get that confirmed from his parents. His parents were very old-school Italians, and, you know, my father's side is the same, and I know that they suppress emotion, and they don't like talking about things that are very uncomfortable, you know, like that. So he had never known about those events. So anyway... Valiant Thor left in 1960, and he returned exactly 1 year later, not going back to the Pentagon, but coming here, and has been here ever since. The saucer fleet is called the Victor class saucer. So there's Victor 1, which is Valiant Thor's. There are it houses 200 people, and it's a double decker. It's about either 200,000 or 300,000 feet. I'm not sure. But on the website, if you toggle through the pages, you'll see there's a picture of the poster with the blueprints on it, by the way. So, because I know a lot of people really, really love seeing that. So, anyway, so Dr. Frank saw him again in 61 and stayed lifelong friends with him and his crew until he passed away in November of 2008. So the Victor class fleet is actually stationed in and around the Earth at 287 locations, and then there is also a starship that is way above over the Earth. That's 14 miles long and 7 miles wide, and that houses all of the beings from around the universe. You know, this is the planet that the whole universe is just enthralled with, because it's the planet of transformation. It's, you know, so everybody is here to help and assist with that transformation. Dr. Frank did visit the starship on many occasions and was asked to speak about his experiences here on Earth, which he did. The vice commanders on Victor 1 are Don, Teal, and Teal is also a teacher. She teaches everybody in the universe about Earth, and she teaches people on Earth about the universe. Many people are invited on board either through night classes where they may remember or not remember, or they're asked to come on board physically. There's many, many people from around the world who have visited Victor 1 in their physical form. Thon, T-H-O-N-N, is another vice commander. And then Zan, Z-A-N-N, he is the ship's doctor, and they call him Doc, but he's the doctor for the starseeds. So, and then there is Unaya, who is... He is also a created being from Melchizedek, who was also a active and permanent crew member on board Victor 1. And his associate's name is, it's pronounced Yo, but it's actually spelled Y-E-O. So there's sort of the basis of the story right there.
Well, that's a whole lot of story.
It is a whole lot of story.
I just flipped to the page where it has the map of Las Vegas, Lake Mead, and Victor 1, which is, shows that it was at the very tip of the Las Vegas Bay. I have been there many times. I've had many ET experiences right there on that spot where Victor 1 is on this map.
Yes. Wow. Yes, absolutely. And it's been stationed there. It was originally stationed in Henderson, Nevada, and sometime in the 80s they moved Victor 1 over to Lake Mead. I think it's just a prettier view. You know, because when you're in the craft, I'm sure everybody knows this, but they can turn the metal transparent and look outside like it's a window. They can turn the whole craft transparent even when they're traveling. So you can actually be, you know, when you're traveling through the stars, you can actually be standing in the stars as you're traveling. You know, it's quite cool.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the things that Frank went through, people trying to harm him and kill him and all those kind of things?
Well, you know, he... you know, his dream, you know, he first, let me tell you, when after he met Valiant, he wrote a book called My Friend from Beyond Earth, which was a small little leaflet, which was about Valiant. And then in 67, he published Stranger at the Pentagon, and it's gone through, I think, three different major publishings. But throughout the years, he traveled around the world telling this story. He spoke to, when he was in Korea, he actually was, met with a president there in the military, and he spoke at a stadium because there were so many of the Korean people who were so thrilled. In fact, his wife, she gave me a whole album of just his stay there, you know, when they went to Korea. So, but there were, you know, throughout the years, there were people who did try and harm him. And Don and Thon usually accompanied him when he traveled and just to watch over him. And on many occasions, saved his life. So one was somebody when he was in Germany speaking over there, even on a panel that even Wernher von Braun was on. Somebody crushed up glass. They said, "Oh, you have a phone call." He was talking to these two journalists who were imposters. And when he returned, they were gone. But while he was away, they put crushed glass into his soup. How about that?
He got off the airplane there in Las Vegas in a car, and these two guys that were like the men in black picked him up.
Yeah. Yes, he was just so excited, and, you know, when these men came up, he thought that they were from the crew, but what he realized was once he got in the car that the car was black and that they were dressed in black, and he knows that the crew members would never dress in all black. They did, and Don and Thon came and took them. Their intentions were to take him out to the middle of the desert and kill him. Don and Thon arrived and actually zapped them somewhere else. And I asked Dr. Frank, I said, "Well, where did they zap them?" You know, and he said, "Well, I've asked that question for many years." And he says, "The only thing that comes to my mind, because they always just smile, they don't say anything, is, you know, they sent them to the salt mines on Pluto or something, you know." He didn't even know, but, you know, but there were many, many times, that happened. When he was first married, somebody ran him and his wife while they were on their honeymoon off the road, and he was taken to the hospital, and he was paralyzed. Not sure if it was from the waist down or the neck down. I have to go back into the notes, but... they said, you know, that he was going to be paralyzed for the rest of his life. He was taken in the morning, and Valiant came in and did his healing on him. He put on his clothes, and he walked out of the hospital that afternoon to the amazement of the paramedics who were just arriving with somebody else and the doctors and the nurses. They couldn't believe it.
Well, that's a that's huge.
It's huge, and I myself have had you know, an experience where I've received, you know, healing that actually came from Teal. I was I ended up having a bowel obstruction, and I was not feeling well for many days, and then I had to have somebody come and pick me up, a friend, and took me to the doctor. They tried to see, and then they rushed me in an ambulance to the hospital. They did x-rays and said they were going to have to operate in the morning. And that night, I woke up within my dream, and then I was awake with my eyes closed, and I felt Teal over me, and I felt bubbles going through my intestines. And I went, oh, my God, I'm going to wake up in the morning, and I'm going to be fine, right? And do you know, I woke up in the morning, and I opened my eyes. It was, I don't know, maybe 7, 8 in the morning. I look over. Dr. Frank is sitting in the chair. And he looked at me and he said, Teal called me early this morning. She told me she fixed you right up. And they did x-rays again, and I went home that afternoon.
Wow.
Yeah. That's isn't that cool?
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Love it.
They are so lovely, by the way, and to all of your Starseed listeners and everyone, all you have to do is in your meditations is just hook up to them. You could hook up to Teal or any of them. They're, you know, we are all on blue beams, and they're the ship's technologies can sensor everything that we're going through. If we're on course with our missions, if we're not feeling well, if something wrong is happening, it alerts the computer. And then it, which is living, by the way, and also if you send your thoughts that way, it also goes there and also alerts them. So if people want to attend the night classes on Victor 1 or on the Starship, all they have to do is ask, and they can ask Teal. She takes care of all of that. And, you know, and sometimes Dr. Frank, when I first met him, told me that I was going to the night classes, that Teal said that I was there, but I never remembered for a while, and then all of a sudden I started remembering and getting little glimpses and things like that. So it was very, you know, very, very cool, because all of a sudden it started bleeding through, and if you ask for it to bleed through into your Earth consciousness, it will.
Yes, I agree with everything you said. There is a lady's name that I wanted to ask you about. Her name is Nancy Warren, and
mm-hmm.
I know that Frank talked about her quite a bit in the early stages of the first meeting with Valiant Thor. Is Nancy
yes.
Warren, is she still alive?
No, she had passed away many, many years before Dr. Frank. I think she may have passed away in the early 90s, Dr. Frank told me. Nancy Warren was a fictitious name made up for the book to protect her identity. But Dr. Frank assured me that she was in a very good place, confirmed by talking to Valiant, because Valiant really, really took to her. He was
really
liked her a lot. He really liked her a lot. So, you know, it was, she was very special to him. And, so I always, I myself always wished that I could have met her and, you know, also interviewed her. I met Dr. Frank in 2001, and we became fast friends. And do you know that when I was growing up, I literally lived 5 minutes from his doorstep?
Wow.
You know, isn't that something? But we became fast friends. We saw each other for lunch every week and spoke on the phone, you know, at least once a day or several times a day. And it was never my intention when I met him to write the screenplay to Stranger at the Pentagon. It all sort of happened organically. And, you know, and just became very, you know, very exciting. And, you know, I read it in the 80s, and when I, you know, saw the photographs of Valiant Thor, Vice Commander Dawn, and Jill is the blonde, and Jill is the wife of Zan, who is the ship's doctor, by the way, just so, because a lot of people don't know that. And, you know, a lot of the other vice commanders like Teal and Zan and Yunaya and Yo, they're not spoken about in the book. You know, they were, you know, Dr. Frank had told me about them when I met him. So it was very interesting to learn about all, you know, the goings on. And, you know, that's a, I mean, not only is that a large crew, but to be stationed in 287 locations in and around the Earth. All those locations, by the way, around the Earth are also mentioned in Stranger at the Pentagon. So
let me ask you, when you wrote the screenplay, did you make Nancy Warren a pretty heavy character?
She is definitely a very good supporting character in the feature-length screenplay. The short film is just the main storyline of Valiant Thor, where he came from, coming here, meeting the president, and, you know, and then leaving a cliffhanger, you know, at the end of the short film, you know, to do that. Where, you know, I you know, when I wrote it, it'll be about under 25 minutes, the short film, but we have 68 visual effects shots. You know, we did shoot on a lot on green screen. We will see Victor One out in the universe traveling. We'll see the giant mothership. We will be on board Victor One and on board the mothership as well in the landing bay, which will make every Starseed person cry, let me tell you, as I already have the artist renderings and Starseeds, and even people who are not awake who see it just weep because it's so sweepingly beautiful, you know, that you just, your heart says home, you know. And then, so we're just getting going on the visual effects now. The whole film is edited. We shot it in earlier this year. And if anybody's fans of Days of Our Life, Eileen Davidson, who plays Kristen DiMera on that show, and she also played Ashley Abbott on Y&R, she's playing Dina Thor, who is Val's wife. Jeff Joslin is playing Valiant Thor. And he starred in, I think, Medea Witness Protection with Tyler Perry. And Joshua Morrow, who plays Nick Newman on Y&R, plays Vice Commander Zan.
Sounds like a wonderful cast. Let's talk a little bit about where do these people come from, these beings? Where does Valiant Thor... what is his original home?
Their origin, I know that Teal's origin and Valiant Thor's origin and Dina Thor's origin is all from Venus. I am not, I believe that Dawn and Thawne are. I never asked that question, so I'm not sure. I know that Yunaya's origin is on the opposite side of the universe. They're called numbered planets, and he's from planet 777, but his work is at Melchizedek, which is, you know, as you know, the universe's spiritual university. If you looked from one expanse to the other, it's 490 planets in the width and breadth of the site in the universe, and all of these planets are different university planets. So all people who graduate also from here will go through Melchizedek and then receive their next schooling of wherever they want to go learn. You know, each planet has its own learning and lessons. Of course, Venus is unconditional love. And boy, I can tell you that when I was writing the screenplay, and I was the most incredible experience was feeling each of them come to me and sharing their feeling body with me, not only their thoughts and their heart, but to feel their feeling body and this unconditional love. You literally, I would sit there and weep for, you know, quite some time before I would start to write, acclimating to this incredible vibrations, and then go into it. And Teal is really one of the most amazing teachers that I've ever experienced. You know, she will always show you how to look at things in many different lights, and you know, all of that. So, you know, it's spelled T-E-E-L, Teal. And by the way, on the website, if anybody is interested, you know, we're still raising money for the short film to finish it. And we're going to be the first Space Brother movie at Comic-Con next year. So isn't that going to be cool? So if anybody who doesn't have, you know, the book is out of print. Stranger of the Pentagon's out of print. Outwitting Tomorrow, which was co-authored by Valiant Thor, is out of print. Millennium 7 by Dr. Frank's out of print. And UFO Conspiracy by Dr. Frank's out of print. The posters of Victor 1 are out of print, and the posters of the Starship are out of print, and all of that. So all of those things, the publisher gave me all the remaining copies of everything just for the campaign so that we can raise the money. So, you know, so if anybody would like any of that, I'm happy to autograph it for them. And they could just go to Stranger at the Pentagon and click on the button, Help Fund Short Film. And it's got all the tiers of, you know, everything that you can get, you know, there. So, you know, and even just for a $25 donation, people can get a Stranger at the Pentagon book autographed by me and an I Heart Valiant Thor wristband, which Lavendar has, and a downloadable copy of the movie when it's ready. But there's everything under the sun, even autographed copies of the screenplay, and people can become, you know, an executive producer or anything like that and get their name on the poster and all that good stuff. So, you know. But can you believe we're going to be the first Space Brother movie at Comic-Con next year?
That's great. And I know that a lot of Starseed listeners will want to participate in this. I would like to ask the next question about Venus, because this past week I just happened to see on the Weather Channel they had a special about Venus, how hot it was on the surface of Venus. So I'm wondering, you say they're from Venus, are they inside the planet? They can't be on top?
They are. Yes. All of the planets throughout our solar system here are all populated. They're all populated on the inside. They have the advanced technologies, even when they even build the motherships, and they build different kinds of ships, they use that same technology. So they can build it with various floors. They have what we call synchrotron skies, which synchronizes the perfect temperature, the perfect light, and then as it goes in, and then it can fade into night, and you would have the same exact experience and not know anything. They have the formula that the universe is made of to create anything at will, because they are fully in full divine God consciousness. So it is quite spectacular, even on the starship, which is the 14 miles long and 7 miles wide. That one, for instance, there's even giant outdoor settings with trees and waterfalls and lakes and rivers, and all of that is also on board. So all of these various levels, and they're not, you know, they're not holograms. They're actually there. They just build them that way because they have the formula. And the resonation fields that they keep on board all of the crafts are what keeps them youthful. You know, everybody looks like they're 30 years old. And even Dr. Frank said that every time he visited Victor One, you go in, you take off all your clothes, you go through disinfecting, or what's the right word? I guess disinfecting or cleansing before you go on, and then they give you a suit to put on when you come on board. But if you needed your glasses or a cane or you had any kind of ailments, the minute you stepped on board, it's gone. You know, and when I was writing the script, he told me he was going to Vegas and that he was going to go visit Victor One. And he actually called me from the ship. And he sounded, I said, Dr. Frank, I said, where are you? And he said, I'm actually calling you from the ship. And I said, you sound like you're 20 years old. And, you know, and that's when he had also told me that story. So, I just find it fascinating. But, of course, once you step off and you're back in, you know, our 3D world here, it all goes back to normal. So he said, so, you know, the thing is nobody ever wants to leave, you know. Okay. So, yeah, there's been, there is one of Dr. Frank's friends that he actually met through Val and Dawn. Was a gentleman named Dr. Lee, and Dr. Lee, I think now is, I don't know, he's between 110 and 120. He lived in Van Nuys for many years, and actually Valiant and them actually moved him onto the ship so that they could just take better care of him there. But his son was asked in the 70s if he wanted to come live with them. So he married a girl from Venus and has been living on the starship ever since. So he stopped aging once he went and lived there.
Well, how about Frank? Did when he died, did he take another body, and is he aboard ship?
Well, you know, I've often wondered that. So, you know, he is around so much. Even all of my friends, you know, I shared Dr. Frank with everybody. I'd just lug him around, you know, and we would have parties, and people just loved meeting him, and everyone fell in love with him. And anyway, I just lost my train of thought. And so a lot of my friends, even to this day, will, like, call me up. If they even met him once, I go, I had the weirdest thing today. I felt Dr. Frank come around me just to say hello. You know, and I said, well, he was. But then I'll hear it from about three or four friends all at once. So I said, oh, Dr. Frank's making the rounds.
Uh-huh.
You know. So, and we did, when we were filming, we had some wonderful things that happened when we were finishing the Oval Office set, and I was sitting at Eisenhower's desk, and I had somebody just take a bunch of pictures, and we got one gigantic orb in several pictures. And as you know, the giant orbs are angel energy. So we were blessed there. But when we were shooting, Jeff Joslin, who plays Valiant Thor, on his uniform, right below the gold on the blue, an anomaly showed up of an oval with a design in the center made of light, and it only showed up in still photography. And it was, we had several cameras on both days, and it showed up there. So it was his insignia of telling us that he was quite happy with the way everything was going. I even had some of my spiritual friends who were there on the set who were just meditating and keeping the energy clear, and they even told me afterwards, they said that they saw when we did the scene with Val Thor and President Eisenhower, that they saw both of them overlight those actors. And when they actually went into that scene, it was amazing. They just transformed. It was incredible because, you know, that's a very poignant part in history right there.
Tell me the name of the actor that plays for Valiant Thor, and I'm going to look his picture up when we're through. What was his name?
His name is Jeff Jocelyn, Joslin. And you can see, you know, on the cover page of StrangerAtThePentagon.com, you can see little promos and the little Valiant Thor story that I put together in a video. So you can see him. Jeff in real life has full gray hair, but in the movie, of course, we darkened it. So,
well, don't you know, a lot of overshadowing, a lot of walk-ins. I mean, this had to be a spectacular event for everyone that participated in this movie. I'm sure that everyone that worked on it has had life-changing experiences already.
You know what? They really and truly have, and that it's helped them, and it's transformed them. And you know, Lavendar, people say to me that I never knew that that these beautiful beings existed. We hear about them in folklore and that angels exist, but, you know, to now, you know, see this, you know, it's been, you know, there's been many, there were other people, you know, many people around the world who have met Valiant Thor as well and his crew. They just don't come out and talk about it. You know, there are many people that Dr. Frank, you know, mentioned around the world that he was in contact with and that, you know, that he's still in contact with today, you know, and people in high places and governments and all of that. You know, he really here is overseeing the transformation so that the earth plane learns how to merge its duality, its light and dark, so that the heart works in unison with the mind and that this world will transform into being fully conscious like the rest of the universe, and then we can actually join with that universal society and be at one with them. And that's going to be such a cool day. That's why we're all here, I think.
Absolutely. I'd like to ask you if you could give us in detail, if you can, some more advanced technologies that are on board the Victor-class saucers.
Sure. Well, these technologies are not only on board the Victor-class saucers, but they're also on motherships and different larger crafts. A lot of these technologies, by the way, are also in my book, The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga, I Am Tehran. And I'll explain quickly when I started writing. I had my spiritual awakening when I was 26. I was woken up by master teachers throughout the universe. That's a long story to go into, but when I started writing about all of these experiences, and I wrote a 400-page book. I went to Mount Shasta. I had an incredible experience with the I Am. I came back, and one of my master teachers said to me, "What would you say if we said you wrote that book for yourself?" And I said that I've learned a lot about myself. And he said, "Now it is time to write the real book." And that's when I started writing I Am Tehran. So it's a trilogy. It'll always be called The Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga, and then each book will be subtitled. So when I was, I started writing that when I was around 28, I believe, and it was published, first published on 11-11-11. But when I was writing, a lot when I would meditate, I would get a click in the back of my neck, and then a teacher would appear, and sometimes they would say something, and sometimes they would just transfer whatever it was, and then it would just bleed through my consciousness in the writing. And one day I saw this woman standing in front of a giant saucer with red hair and a powder blue uniform, very voluptuous, beautiful, with porcelain white skin and green eyes. And at the same time, I was writing all about Melchizedek, and I bought 3 7s, and I put them on my wall. Now, this is in the early 90s. Then we flash forward. I have moved into my new place in 2001, and as I set up my couches in the living room, all of a sudden I start seeing the energy signatures of Valiant Thor and his crew members sitting on my couches. And, I mean, immediately. Now, I remember, I haven't read the book since the 80s. It wasn't even in my consciousness. And I was like, God, why are they there? It wasn't like I could see them physically. Every time I walked by for months, every hair on my arm would stand up. And I, you know, and then my casting partner at the time wanted me to meet her two friends who are an older couple, and she said they saw UFOs all the time. So I met them, and the first words out of the woman's mouth, she said, "You know, our friend Dr. Frank," and I went, "Strangers?" And she said, "Yes." And she said, "Do you want to meet him?" And I went, "Yeah." So 2 days later, I was sitting with Dr. Frank having lunch, and I realized that it was Valiant Thor who was connecting me to Dr. Frank. And then Dr. Frank went and to visit Victor One, and he came back and said, "Guess who said to say hello to you?" And in the meantime, while I'm preparing things, you know, at the beginning of the script, I see the woman with the red hair from 10 years ago back in my consciousness talking to me and laughing and telling me what to do and this and that. And all of a sudden, and he said, "Teal." And I went, "Oh, my God." I said, "Does she have red hair?" And we described her back. And he was like, "Yes." So way back when, even when I was writing the book, there Teal was also one of the teachers who was guiding me. And when he came back a second time, he said, "Unaya said to say hello." And that's when I found out Unaya's planet of origin was 777. That's why I bought those 3 7s and stuck them on the wall. So what I'm saying is all of this information was coming from their source, even from the beginning before I knew Dr. Frank, but also from the other teacher sources. So the organics on the ship, they have brains that are alive and that live on, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years. They can just keep going on. They keep it nourished just like, you know, everybody else. You can actually speak to the computer and have it answer to you in any voice that you would like it to be. So if you want it to be, you know, a very soft female voice, it'd be that, or you know, a pleasing, whatever you want, it will speak to you that way. It could speak to you telepathically. It could speak to you out loud as well. Some ships are capable. Some ships are thought ships. Taron actually has a thought ship. And his actual DNA is fused into the organic metal, and it is his pure thought. He thinks of the resonation field that they're in, and then he goes to the resonation field of where he wants to go. Now, he could travel into any universe, into a multiverse, or he could travel into any super universe, of which there's 7, But there, you have to have clearance first before you do that. But he could think the ship there and be there actually in the next second. So those are thought ships, but those are beings who are really, really, really pure in thought. And then there are, and then motherships can also do the jump, as they call them, the thought jump. Nothing is predicated on size. And then, of course, they have the regular craft can also bend space, as we all know. They go through these tunnels that were built by super beings long ago, and a lot of people don't even know how they were built. Some of them have closed up, but they still use those tunnels. And some of the even some of the craft, like let's say if one of Taran's crew members, if Taran was away, they could actually fly his ship, for instance, because they fused a piece of Taran's DNA with the other person's DNA as well. So there's, I mean, it gets into some really cool stuff, you know. But what's really cool is Victor One, you know, has many, many rooms and, you know, has a gym. It has everything under the sun. People can look at the blueprints there as well, you know, on the website. It's really, really cool.
Can you tell us a little bit about the power rod?
The power rod, what's that?
It says the power rod, which runs from the top to the bottom of the ship, is located directly in the center of Victor 1. This rod also powers the defense mechanism in the form of advanced laser-type equipment. It is from this rod that the laboratory and the medical treatment rooms are powered.
Ah, well, see, that I don't know. I never asked Dr. Frank about that. But, they travel also on beams, and they also, like when Victor 1 is at Lake Mead, they send a beam from the bottom of the ship that goes down and just anchors into rock so that it stays stationary as well. So, and their crafts are all of these crafts, by the way, that I've been describing. None of them have weapons. They only have deflector weapons. So, if something was fired upon them, they could disintegrate it or dissolve it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is just
they're about
amazing.
Love. They're not about. They're not about war.
All of our listeners are just hanging on your every word. Let me ask you kind of a funny question. You know, we have a show that goes all over the world on Blog Talk Radio, from Australia to Japan, everywhere. And I'm just wondering if somehow the ships know that we're talking now and they're beaming their energies to the people that are listening. Is that possible?
Yes, absolutely. And usually what happens is they will beam it up there, and if they could be listening to it in real time, or they could record it and watch it in, they could actually watch it and listen to it later. And because we're all the star seeds are on the blue beams anyway, they could be watching it with us actually talking in what they call the history hologram machine, which is sort of like beyond 3D television. Everything looks so dimensional, I can't even explain it, but you could do it in a seat and watch it right before you, or you could do it in a theater and watch it. And what they have is history coins. And on these coins, they're about the size of a silver dollar, and they are silver, and they're etched in blue light. And they are recorded history from the Akashic Records. And so if you are allowed, you could watch the history coin of any person who lived on Earth, or if you're out there in the universe and want to watch on anybody else. So if you wanted to watch, you know, the life of Christ, if you wanted to watch Moses, if you wanted to watch, you know, Cleopatra or, you know, ancient Rome, you know, you could watch it on the History Coin machine and get it as it actually was recorded. And it's more of a capsulated version, so that you get the high points. But what you also get when you're watching this is you also get the feeling, the feelings and the emotions that went along with each of the people who were experiencing at that time. So it goes beyond a regular watching experience. You become a part of what they are. And then in watching it, you become a part of who they were because you experienced who they were, and then they become sort of a part of your makeup. You know what? I just want to cry right now. I don't know why. I mean, can you imagine seeing that? Yeah.
And how about smell? Yeah. As you look at these records, can you actually smell the flowers and the things that you're seeing?
Yes. Everything.
Does that happen?
Yes, it's a full sensory experience. It is a full sensory experience.
You know, for the past few years, I've had this strange thing happen to me. Sometime I'll be watching television, and I'll tune into the person that's playing that role, and all of a sudden I can smell them, and it really freaks me out, and I don't even know how I do that.
You know why? As I find that myself, because as we are all, you know, gaining more and more enlightenment as time goes on, we are becoming fully conscious. We are becoming telepathic. We are becoming all of these things, and they don't happen overnight, but all of a sudden we start tuning into things that we normally don't do, and then we're starting to gain those sensory experiences that we're going to have full conscious of when we you know, hit that milestone in this lifetime.
Yeah, it just gets pretty weird when I start smelling patchouli off of an actor.
As long as the actress is not wearing poison, I'm good. Remember that perfume? Oh, my God.
They named it right, too, didn't they?
They sure did. I'll never forget when actress came in, she put a bottle on her, and she came in my office. I couldn't get that smell out for weeks. Oh, my God.
I have enjoyed talking to you so much. I'm going to turn the program now over to Arielle. I know she has some questions to ask you. And she also has a switchboard, which people are calling in, and they'd like to probably talk to you a little bit. But I want you to send me your birth information. And I know you're starseed. I would just love to see your configuration. And let's talk later, because I was flashing on some things that I just wanted to tell you, but tell you in private.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I will. I'll email you as soon as we're done and send you all my info too, okay?
Yes, you need to date, place, and time, and then also where you live now. Those are the things I need.
Yes.
Okay,
Ariel,
back to you.
All right. Hugging you, Lavendar.
Thank you.
Hi, Ariel.
So, Craig, your energy is just so buoyant and light and very, very enjoyable listening. I keep having flashes of Star Trek you're describing, and I'm just a huge, huge Star Trek fan. All the way back to the original, simply because it's a world that I want to live in.
Yes.
You know, and that's I read what Sylvia Brown wrote about your book, in that you're kind of the modern-day Gene Roddenberry with a view to the future that's hopeful, optimistic, and uplifting. And I just got thrilled with that because, you know, Gene Roddenberry was also a contactee, although I don't know if he realized that consciously.
He did.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that he did. I know that all that technology, even though we don't understand it, it's all based on you know, on a reality somewhere.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
It's just mind-boggling that these people, you know, from the Victor One, are really involved in our planet, and they just don't get any press. So
no, they don't. And you know, they are here in drones. You know, there are many races and species from all over this universe and other universes. They have even brought beings here from the world first created, where the great I Am is from. They have even brought beings who stepped down partial of their energies to come and incarnate here as well to bring forth all of this information about, you know, how you work with your own light and dark, your own duality, and how you become fully conscious and all of that. All of that is really beautifully executed in I Am Tehran through all of them. And it's really quite extraordinary. I mean, people have written me and say that it changed their life because they hadn't viewed things. And you get to learn about what the universe is and the setup of the universe and the incredible Starseed program that's coming out of Melchizedek and being placed on Earth while having a very fun time and a story that could also be a movie, but as well, which I'm sure I Am Tehran will become a movie at some point. But to talk about Gene Roddenberry, you know, many people I know knew him. I never met him myself. They told me that he knew that he was receiving information from star people. And you want to hear another fascinating thing? Guess who we really have to thank besides Gene Roddenberry for Star Trek? You'll never guess in a million years, but it will make you smile.
His wife?
Lucille Ball. Lucille
Ball. Oh, yeah, that's
Ball.
Right.
She is the one who is the head of Desilu, which was RKO, who greenlit Star Trek and Mission Impossible. So if she hadn't greenlit it, it was turned down everywhere else, from what I understand. And Lucy is the one who did it. So, and Lucy also had a little vacation house in Sedona. So I'm sure Lucy was pretty enlightened.
Oh, absolutely ahead of
yeah.
time. And I do remember
oh,
that.
Oh yeah.
A documentary
yeah.
not too long ago on the creation of Star Trek, and so it was the feminine, it was the woman.
That's
opened,
right.
You know, so yay.
That's right.
And she had red hair.
And she had red hair. That's it.
yeah,
so yes, indeed.
What am I thinking? Like superimpositions, layers and layers, all connected. I'm thinking of things and stories that Lavendar has told me, and things that you're telling me, and how it's just all jiving together. And I'm so pleased that you are who you are and doing what you're doing, because you know the film industry really needs to. Balance out all the with uplifting messages about the future. All of the movies that come out that are they sell because there's alien invasion and war and you know, that whole thing is
right.
so not about what they are about. You know?
No. We're going to bring. With Stranger at the Pentagon and I Am Tehran, they are deeply spiritual stories with a message. So, and you know what? People like Spielberg brought those things, you know, forward with even with Close Encounters and E.T., of course. You know, the world really, really wants that. You know, I was speaking just earlier today to an ex-head of a studio who ran a studio for 12 years And we were speaking about how even he, this is how, you know, somebody has to step out and start talking about this stuff. I have always talked about it from day one. You know, me being in the business and casting now for 30 years, and, you know, being in the business my whole life. And, but, you know, I was even talking to this ex-studio head who said, I realized at some point that it was about bringing enlightening material to the world, and that's what I'm trying to do right now. So we're going to start working together on some other things as well. But, you know, but it's amazing. All the lights start turning on, and they're all starting to turn on here in Hollywood, you know, because a lot of people are saying that that's what they want. And so with Stranger at the Pentagon, and when something, when it comes out as a feature film, and when it does extremely well, what will happen is all of Hollywood will say, well, what else does everybody got? And
right.
Then those kinds
of,
that kind of content, yes, that content starts getting made. And there's a lot of star seeds that have been preparing all of their screenplays and their books. And I know this because I, you know, I hear Teal telling me this, and that they need to all be ready, because over the next 10 years, when this starts to explode, what's going to happen is, you know, you got to be in the right there, you know, to get it in there, you know, to get your stuff made. And now there is no excuse. Anybody can do this, you know. You can do anything on the internet. You know, I, even making the short film, I did two fundraising campaigns. I'm still, you know, raising money to do it. But it, and what I didn't understand was the lesson in all of that, because I woke up one morning and I heard Teal say in my head, she said, it's time to make the short film. I want you to do a campaign and put it on Kickstarter. And I went, okay. And I did it. Boom. There we had it. Then, like, boom, there was the money. And I sat back and I was like, what is the lesson in this? And I heard the lesson in it was that it is for the people, by the people. It had to be the energy of all involved who wanted to see this, to make the change, to make these kinds of things happen. So I, you know, so that was my lesson in it, you know, because I was like just waiting for, you know, somebody to write a big check to make the big one.
Right.
So, you know, but it's going to be so cool, and I'm just so excited about it. But like I said, people can watch the promos and stuff on StrangerAtThePentagon.com. So, or if they want to check out I Am Taran, it's autobiography of anet.com. So there's lots of cool stuff to look through and see all the color artwork. By the way, I worked with an artist for over 3 years, bringing all of the ETs, the extraterrestrial worlds, the ships, and all of that to life. So there's over 40 renderings of all of this in I Am Taran, and in, there's a whole extraterrestrial terminology in the back of the book. So.
Okay.
You know, about the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if anybody does want to read, by the way, if people have Kindle, it's like $3 right now on Amazon. So, you know, if people like reading on Kindle. So, but the, but if people do read it, make sure you read the terminology in the back first. Do not read the ending of the book. It is the biggest surprise ending that people go crazy for. So don't ruin it by going to the end. You have to read it all the way through to get to the end. So, but it's really, really cool. So, so Ariel, what else do you want to know about Mr. Thor that I might know that I can share?
How long have they been around? I mean, certainly their lifespan is enormous, or
yes.
Are they immortal?
Well, Valiant, Thor, and Yanaya are immortal, and the rest of the crew are born of man and woman. I don't know the exact length of their lifespan. I know Dr. Frank used to tease Teal asking how old she was. Because she could be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years old. She's so wise, and she's so much fun, you know. But usually each planet, by the way, will have its own, the beings that choose to go to a planet once they go back to Melchizedek, and then they go back out again. So let's say if they decided, you know, hypothetically to go to one planet and they were learning about this, the allotted time span in a lifetime to learn that is 1,200 years. So that might be the lifespan around for that planetary consciousness. Or if it could be 2,300 years, or it could be, you know, it could be 5,000 years. It all depends on what the learning and the length of time for the learning is, because some planets you can, they're so advanced that you can continue to learn and that kind of thing. Like the one cool thing about all of these ships, by the way, is that they're interdimensional. So you could be on board a mothership and see somebody walk from the fourth dimension into the eighth dimension, and then seeing this interaction between beings, like if they, like a ship is, could be multiple layered as well. So it's just not holding one, you know, like if a giant mothership had 3,000 floors and it had, you know, a million people on it, it could have 12 dimensions of that with different people. So those people could like go, boop, like if you and I were talking, somebody could walk out of the dimension and go, oh, by the way, do you want to have blah, blah, blah dinner in, you know, in my dimension tonight? You know? And then they could, you know, or that kind of thing. You know, I mean, I know that was a little hokey, but how's that for a line? That's like the old pickup line. You want to have dinner in my dimension tonight, baby.
Yeah, oh my God.
You know, that's funny.
Well, you know, where
I was going with
the lifespan question was to inquire if they were here during the time of Atlantis.
Well, I don't know if Valiant Thor was. I don't think Yanaya was, but I really couldn't answer that. I know a lot of people feel that connection to that time period. Let me just explain something about starseeds, by the way, that is told by Tehran. The starseed program. So let's say you go to Melchizedek and your next thing is you're going to become a starseed on Earth. For you to go through the entire program, you have to come to Earth and you have to incarnate as every race, color, creed, religion, so that you know what it's like to walk in each of those shoes, so that you gain that experience. Usually the lifetimes are short. Interestingly enough, I was doing a radio show a couple of weeks ago, and a lady called in who's been a nurse for, and she's fully awake. She's been a nurse for like 30 years, and she said, Craig, I can't believe all of these young people coming in. I recognize them as starseeds, and they're young. They're in their 20s. They're in their 30s, and they leave. And when I explained, when I was talking about the starseed thing, it finally clicked in for her, because you go out, and then you come back in. And when you have gained all of that, then you come in with a greater mission and you become a mighty messenger, and you come in with a mission that is to help shift and change consciousness across the planet as well. So You know, and again, all of these stations, none are higher or lower. They all work in unison and in community with each other for the greater good, because in the end, it's the evolvement of all of the beings. You know, they're able to see how everyone is growing. Everyone on Earth, these computers, keeps track of. They can see who is growing, what areas are not growing. Then that's how they incorporate more messengers or star seeds into those areas, so that they can, you know, move through the density of the consciousness there and then bring it up. So as we know, in the big cities and things, you know, things, consciousness raises quicker, but then even in the denser areas, you know, star seeds even go in there as well. So it's just a whole fascinating program. I mean, when you think about it and you think about everything, how it's all interconnected, and like, I knew I was going to love you guys. I couldn't wait to do your show.
We love you, Craig. And remember that short film for Stranger at the Pentagon has been created and released, and you can go to strangerathepentagon.com and see Craig's work as he brings Dr. Frank's story to life. So that's it for us tonight, and we will be back in 2 weeks. And remember, always keep gratitude in your heart and give compassion instead of judgment. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.